Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Deep Drive podcast. We're here for episode 61. We're halfway through the season at this point. A lot of things going on with, teams starting to become kind of fill into those buyers and sellers roles. We still have some teams in the middle. We'll talk about those for sure. The all-star rosters were finalized. There are a couple guys who obviously may not go on to pitch or hit in LA because of either injuries or for pitchers. There's some guys who are pitching Sunday, Saturday, won't be able to pitch in the all-star game. But we'll talk about snubs, some guys that we thought absolutely should have made it. We'll kind of delve into all of that. But, first off, James, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. Okay, so if we're looking down the list of things like that have kind of happened since last time we recorded, we've seen all-star rosters come out fully. Last time we went over who we think should make the all-star team, I had those somewhere. I never actually made the graphics that I was going to make, but just generally speaking, I think we had a consensus that Ty France should start the all-star game for the American League at first base, and he didn't even make the team. And then just now it was announced Corey Seager would make the team over him as well, which is another one that I just don't understand really. But I think since then things have changed. Ty France has, I guess you could call him a snub, but at the same time, I also think that he's been quite overrated by the general public as far as how good he's actually been this year. I don't think Vladimir Guerrero deserved it over him, but he's eighth in the league at his position in F4. Guys ahead of him, Luis Arraez and Jose Abreu are both in the American League, and you can only pick two guys from the AL. I think Abreu was actually a bigger snub than France. I know Abreu hasn't been the most consistent, but since the end of May, he's probably been the best first baseman in the league, in the American League at least. So I don't know. I think people are overreacting to some of these snubs. Rodon was a big one, but he made the team eventually. So I think that's huge for him. He deserved it 100%. I think the biggest remaining snubs are actually Abreu, like I mentioned, and then Zach Wheeler and Kevin Gausman. I don't know how Gausman missed the team. It doesn't actually make any sense because, if you want to make the argument, I wrote this in an article so I could pull that up. But if you want to make the argument that these pitchers should be chosen based on, their war, not their war, because that's the argument you can make in favor of Gausman and Wheeler. But if you want to say that these guys should have made it because of their ERA, Gausman wasn't even close to the worst in the ERA. He was close. He was third to last in ERA among the pitchers who made it in the American League. And then Wheeler in the American League and the National League was sixth out of eight. But these guys both lead their leagues in FIP, and then Rodon was second. So the top three guys in the entire league in FIP didn't make the team originally. And FIP is a stat that generally, even if you don't believe in advanced stats or you don't really value them, that's one that that's one that they value anyways. So I just don't think that made very much sense.
Yeah, and we saw Cole make the team, so clearly ERA wasn't the number one thing here. And that's not for me to sit here and say that Cole's an awful pick for the All-Star game, just that there has to be more consistency with pitchers. I think we don't see that same level of consistency. How did Rodon not originally make the roster? What justification was there not to put him on the roster? You mentioned Gausman, right? What justification is there for Gausman not to be on the roster? For Wheeler, what justification is there, right?
And then for Dylan Cease as well, who's a guy I forgot to mention, is Dylan Cease has been undoubtedly better than Nestor Cortes this year. Especially Cortes is kind of, he was off to a great start and he's a fan favorite, but at the same time, you got to actually look at the full body of work here and realize Cortes's last few starts is not really, he's not shown up. He's not been the same. I think between Gausman and Cease, those spots, that spot that went to Cortes definitely should have gone to one of them. I would lean Gausman, but Cease is a guy who he has such a low ERA. It doesn't make any sense why he didn't make the team. And then Wheeler, And I understand that some of these guys made the team because they're their only guy. Like the Reds, Luis Castillo, he had to make it, unless you want to go Brandon Drury, which you can make the argument for. But a guy like Max Fried, like they tend to favor your players with low ERAs, but
right.
But Zach Wheeler has a lower ERA than Max Fried. And Max Fried made the team ahead of him. And then if you want to make the argument that Wheeler hasn't thrown enough innings because he missed a couple starts at the beginning of the year, how did Clayton Kershaw make the All-Star team? I think Kershaw should have been the one left off generally, but at the same time, like it's in LA, it's kind of a, like it's at Dodger Stadium. It's more of like a legacy pick than this year pick, even though Kershaw has been great this year. I just think however you argue that the MLB should pick their all-star team, Zach Wheeler, Kevin Gausman, Carlos Rodon should have all been all-stars from the beginning.
Yeah. And, you know, you touched on a little bit with Ty France, right? In no world is Ty France more deserving than Jose Abreu right now. I actually like literally did not look at Jose Abreu's stats. So some White Sox fans commented on my Twitter that, he had missed the team and they're like, hey, look at his stats. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. I think a lot of people kind of forgot of myself included, obviously here, France's stats post-injury have not been great. Now, whether that's because of injury or not, we're not talking about true talent level for players. We're talking really a lot about production for the All-Star game, right? So if we want to argue true talent, that's just not an argument you're going to make for an All-Star game, especially for an All-Star game selection. If we go out based on true talent, your All-Stars are, you know, DeGrom is making the All-Star team. Tatis is making the All-Star team. You know, like we're not making a true talent argument here. It's a production argument. And I think it's really unfair that the way that pitchers, especially, because at least you can get it with position players, that's fan voting, right? You can see how fans influence that, you know, it's popularity, whatever. Pitchers are selected by, you know, Major League Baseball, by coaches. How they can't get it right is beyond me, because these are people in the game, right? There should be some sort of consensus, some sort of consistent approach to picking all-stars, so we don't have these awful snubs. I'm not saying, you know, it has to be perfect or I have to 100% agree with it, because there are guys who are like by the smallest of differences deserve, like Arenado versus Machado, they're like neck and neck in terms of wins of replacement. If Arenado got picked, it's not that big of a deal. But you know, like Rodon and not having Cease on the roster but having Cortez on the roster, that's a bad miss right there. Or not having Gausman on the roster and having Cortez on the roster, that's a bad miss, right? Like that's objectively a bad miss. And even picking relievers, like you picked Gregory Soto as a Tigers reliever. Is that really the best pitcher you can pick from the Tigers? I mean, you could have arguably gone with Skubal, you could have gone with Joe Jimenez. Like, there's so many different guys you could have gone with. They're so unbelievably bad at picking all-stars. It's, you know, beyond me.
Well, I think the problem with the guys like the Tigers is that you need somebody from that team and you need relievers on the roster. And there's not a lot of deserving relievers. I think Devin Williams probably should have made it in the National League. He's been probably the best reliever in baseball over the past like couple of months now. I think the narratives around pitchers can also influence the way that all-stars are picked, though. Even though it's not picked by the fans, I think they can still influence it. Just the way that like Cortez made it because he's a fan favorite, and like you heard a lot about him in the beginning of the year because he kind of came out of nowhere. You didn't expect this from him, right? Nobody really like thought that this was going to happen. But with a guy like Abreu, like you look down at his numbers on May 15th and he's hitting 197 with a 69 WRC plus, and you know, that's when people, I mean, like in the middle of May, I think it's more so June, but in the middle of May to the beginning of June is when people start talking about like, oh, this guy's going to be an all-star or this guy's not. And I think at that point, Abreu was just kind of like not on anyone's radar. And for that reason, he didn't really get the recognition he deserved. But since May 16th, he's hit 359, 442, 565. That's the slash line with a 190 WRC plus. He's been the best first baseman in the American League. Obviously Goldschmidt's been better in the National League, but there's not really an argument against him other than the fact that he had a slow start, but you're going for the full body work, not just the consistency. And I think that that's where they struggle to pick these guys. But you know, the automatic bids, I think it's cool that every team gets an all-star. I think I actually like that. I know a lot of people are against it because they think that it takes spots from guys who are more deserving, and that might be true, but I think it's fun that every team gets an all-star. It keeps more fans engaged. I think for those like small market teams that kind of like they suck this year, but at least they can say like, oh, this guy's playing in the all-star game. I want to like I want to see him play because he's one of our guys, right? And, you know, I'm looking at a team like the Cubs, which, you know, it's my favorite team, but we've got two guys in the All-Star game and they're both definitely deserving. Neither of them are made it off of like, oh, they need a guy, because Contreras is obviously he's the best catcher in the league so far this year. And then Happ has been great. I think they're both going to get traded, but we'll see. But if you look at a team like the Tigers or the A's, especially Oakland, where Oakland traded away, or not traded away, they traded away their whole roster this offseason. They're going to trade away Montas probably, but Blackburn might be a guy they keep. So I think it's interesting that he made the team over Montas, even though Frankie Montas was probably more deserving. Same goes for the Tigers, where you said Skubal could have made it. I think that would have been great. He's young. You know, he's a fun lefty. I like to watch Skubal pitch, but you can't have the entire All-Star team be starting pitchers. You need relievers out there too. And so I think for that reason, Soto was picked ahead of him. But, you know, who knows? Who knows what their philosophy really is?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate the, you know, one rule thing. I just think that they could get a little bit better at picking them and kind of be a little more strategic there. You know, but that's a nitpick. I think for the most part, you know, the All-Star game, there are some bad misses for sure. But I think some people get riled up over some misses that really they shouldn't get riled up over, because they're not really misses. They're just slight statistical disagreements. You know, it's really, but I still think there needs to be a, you know, the fan voting process, like the fact that Alvarez isn't starting in the All-Star game. I think Ohtani absolutely, you know, he's probably the MVP right now if the season ends, but they have to know that Ohtani is going to get voted in as the DH. And also, but you know, he's getting voted as a pitcher as well. Like I don't think anyone could sit back and say, yeah, we had no idea Ohtani was going to win the DH vote. Like, you knew he was going to win a DH vote, but he's not necessarily just a DH. We know he's more than a DH. So I think restricting your ability to vote for him to only the DH spot, or not giving Alvarez an ability to get outfield votes, is really dumb to me. That was very much like, it should be Ohtani starting in the AL if they wanted him to play so bad. I mean, I think McClanahan should start the All-Star game. That's just my preference.
I think you're going to get Ohtani starting the All-Star game on the mound. Probably. But I really think Alvarez should be eligible as an outfielder.
Right.
Stanton was, and he's played less in the outfield than Alvarez. So, you know, it doesn't matter now because Alvarez isn't going to play anyways. But, like, it would have been cool for him to have, like, the All-Star starter thing, I guess, on your resume. Like, that doesn't actually make a difference to anyone. Like, you're an All-Star, and if you're not, you're not. Like, it doesn't really – like starting or not, no one remembers that 20 years down the line when we're looking at your Hall of Fame case. But, you know, at the same time, it's nice, I guess. I think Starling Marte making the All-Star team was criminal.
Making it or not making it?
No, he made it.
Oh,
he's
that bad.
He's 10th among National League outfielders in WAR.
Yeah, but they're looking at the bat, and also that's F WAR. Like, I'm pretty sure R WAR views him very differently, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe, but I think Nimmo has been just far and away better than him.
Oh, Nimmo didn't make it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's bad then. Yeah, no, because if there's a better outfielder on your own team,
right?
Yeah.
Like, they're teammates, and Nimmo's been the better one, and Marte made it over him. Yeah. I think that's, you know, and he's 10th. You know, guys ahead of him. Profar was never gonna, like, Profar, Varshow, Lux, like, those guys aren't going to make the All-Star team because, you know, they're not, like, flashy, because, you know, a guy like Kyle Schwarber may have less WAR than Gavin Lux, but Schwarber has 25 more homers. So, you know, it's the All-Star team. You got to pick the guys who are going to be, like, the most interesting to watch too. It's about marketing your game.
And yeah, I will say though, if like I know that we're looking at Fangraphs, but on Baseball Reference, Nimmo and Marte do have the same WAR, and Marte has a better OPS plus. I can kind of understand if like you're just a casual fan, kind of picking outfielders, how you end up picking Marte over Nimmo.
But that's not the fans, because these are backups. The backups got picked by the managers.
Oh, okay, yeah, no. Then okay, no, you're right. I mean, but then again, it's offense. Like I think the tough thing with defense is we don't know what teams are looking offensively. So like we may be like, oh, look at his outs above average and his F WAR. And teams are like probably just care about offense and they're not for the All-Star game, and they're probably picking on offense and like, you know.
But I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure the way the manager pick works is that the manager of the team picks, not like, like the manager of the All-Star team picks, not like it's not like a voted on thing. So I think it's literally Dave Roberts pick Starling Marte over Brandon Nimmo.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm just saying like I don't know what the process is. I can see it with guys who like have slightly better or close to better offensive numbers, how they get in over other guys just because defense I don't think is easy to quantify, especially for outfielders, but I do think Nimmo should have at least made the All-Star team. I think we can both agree there that he absolutely should have. I'm just not gonna get too upset over it because again, offense is like the king here. But you know what? If we're gonna say offense is the king here, Alvarez made it over Otani. So, and as a DH spot. So again, this is just a lot of inconsistency with how they pick. And you know, baseball's always had this with awards and All-Star games. This isn't new to this year. I think people sometimes act like this is new, but this isn't. This is an every year thing with awards, with anything that ever is voted on with baseball. There's inconsistencies on how it's voted on. I don't know. I think the All-Star game with Nimmo and Marte, it's a matter of just offense. They just pick based on offense.
And I think there's like an argument there that, you know, who really cares about defense in the All-Star game? But at the same time, if you're not like going to look at the full, like what the player's done on like a full body of work, I just don't know. I don't know how you could justify that. Cause there's certain guys who then in that case would just like never make the All-Star team. They just can't.
Right.
Like a guy like Tommy Edman, who, you know, 110 WRC plus type hitter, but he's, you know, he's second in the National League in WAR among shortstops. He's only trailing Swanson. Swanson's like far and away been the best shortstop in the National League this year. And then you go Edmund, Turner. So Turner's starting and then Swanson's backing him up, right? So Edmund and Lindor both didn't make it. Who are the next two? Well, I guess Edmund's ahead of Turner, but you know, Turner's a Dodger, so he's going to get more votes like that. The same way that the Canadian players in the American League are getting a ton of votes because they have a whole country voting for them. And then a guy like Edmund, you see, I guess you could call it a quote-unquote snub. He wasn't, like, technically a snub because of the way that you look at it. Like, once the fans voted in Turner, you had to go Swanson or Edmund. You couldn't go both, and so they went with Swanson, and that makes sense. But Edmund is, I think he's the highest WAR player, not to make the All-Star team, position player. But we'll see.
There might be some news breaking during this pod.
About what?
So Jack Sawinski is getting a lot of hugs around the Pirates clubhouse after today's game. If you aren't aware, he was traded, I believe, in a deal with the Padres. And this is interesting because Sawinski's a rookie. He's 23. He has a 101 WRC plus to major league level. He's kind of come down to earth after a hot start, but he's a pretty good defender. Where could he possibly be going? I mean, this is a rookie, right? Like, where would he be going?
I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I would prefer trades not happen right now, per se, so that we can actually, you know, have some time to think about it, but I feel like this is like a weird year for buyers and sellers, if you think about it, because how many teams are going to sell necessarily? Like, we know, okay, you know that, you know, the Royals are going to sell, the Tigers are going to sell, you know, teams like that, you know, A's, you know, out West, Diamondbacks, Rockies aren't really, they've never really been quote unquote sellers. They always kind of hold, they just do nothing at the deadline. They're always weird. Cubs are sellers. Pirates are sellers, I guess, but what do they have to sell? Evan Quintana and I guess Sawinski. You know, we know certain teams are selling, but there's a lot of like mediocre teams that are in the playoff mix because of that third wildcard spot. I think of the White Sox in any other year would be selling, right? Like without the third wildcard, they are absolutely out of it. No chance of making the playoffs. They're selling. Cleveland.
I think they're going to stand pat. I think the White Sox are just going to stick it out. I think they buy. I don't think they sell.
I think that'd be terrible for them. Like they should trade Jose Abreu. They should trade, you know, AJ Pollock if they can get any value for him. Right? Like they should not be I think standing pat at the deadline is probably the worst thing you can do because you gain nothing, right? You there's nothing for you.
I think there are certain teams that can stand pat and get away with it. You know, you look at a team like, you know, the Yankees, what are they going to actually go out and buy?
I think they actually have quite a, like, I think if the Yankees don't go out and buy, they're not beating, like, you or can't.
Houston, who's Houston going to buy? Contreras? Like,
if Houston gets Contreras, who's beating that team with Contreras?
And I think one thing you can look at with Contreras and Maldonado is like, yes, Contreras is the much, much, much better player. But I think Houston values Maldonado the way he treats their pitchers. Like, he's, their numbers with him are much better. You look at the Cubs, and this is an argument against Contreras' strain value, but the Cubs pitchers have like an ERA that's like 3 runs higher with Contreras behind the plate than Gomes. I don't know if you can like, I don't know if that's fully Contreras' fault. Like, there's obviously some variation there that you can't just blame on the catcher. But when it's that drastic and it's over a half a season sample size, you can kind of start looking at it and go like, oh, wow, you know, these pitchers, they might not be comfortable with him back there. He's not stealing enough strikes. He's not calling pitches well. Like, there's clearly something going on here that's leading him behind the plate giving up more runs.
That is true, but I will say, I mean, maybe it's a smaller team with better pitch calling or maybe just better fucking pitching talent can work it out. If the Astros aren't interested in Contreras, that tells you all you need to know. If they are interested and they do end up getting him, like, that means that, one, they don't think the value for Maldonado is there to warrant not upgrading at catcher. And you could always make Maldonado a backup, a personal catcher, whatever that may be. If Contreras is, and also remember, the Astros might need a first baseman. Gurriel's been awful to start the year. Like, if they were to get a guy like, let's say, Jose Abreu, I'm thinking just that's a good first baseman right there. That seems a lot better, right? And you also think Abreu, Crawford boxes, that's a nightmare for opposing pitchers. You know, the Yankees, Severino is going to be on the 10-day IL most likely. Taillon has been struggling lately. Luis Castillo is very clearly at least their second best pitcher, like very clearly. If he would be a Yankee, that's a huge swing in the playoffs to get a much better starter starting game two. That's a starter.
You think Castillo's out there on game two for the Yankees?
Yes, absolutely. I think Luis Castillo is closer to a top 10 pitcher than Luis Severino is. And I also think, like, I think Severino's good. I think he's pretty good. I think he's actually really good. But I think of it from like a, like, who do you think is more likely to be on the mound in October? Like, active roster. Who's more likely to be on that mound?
Yeah, I mean, Castillo's if you're talking about a health thing, then obviously Castillo, Severino's been.
Yeah, not just that, but like, you know, Castillo has been, I know outside of what the start of last year, really, he's been what, a consistent top 10 pitcher in baseball pretty easily. Like, he's been really freaking good for a pretty decent amount of time. I don't really see why you wouldn't want to at least explore that option. Also for the Yankees, I guess Aaron Hicks has been playing better lately. He's also got a shin contusion right now, but he'll be a bone contusion. He'll be hopefully fine. But you know, if Ian Happ's available, we're going to argue Ian Happ isn't better than Aaron Hicks as a baseball player.
Oh, he is.
Right. Like, I think
he's way better
for the Yankees and Astros. It comes down to, hey, we're really fucking good right now. Those are the two best teams in the American League. Like, if those two teams don't match up in the American League Championship Series, something has gone horrifically wrong for one of the two teams. It would be a massive upset. Like, this isn't like last year where, yes, the Red Sox beat the Rays, but it wasn't like a groundbreaking, like, life-changing upset. If the Astros were to fall to Minnesota or Boston or Tampa or Toronto, I'd be stunned. If the Yankees were to fall to Minnesota, Tampa, Toronto, Boston, considering how I mean, Toronto's interesting. Toronto, I wouldn't say I'd be stunned for them.
I wouldn't be surprised, like, if Boston knocks off the Yankees. They have a
tendency. No, I'd be surprised. Boston sucks. Boston's very bad.
I think Boston's really good. They've been.
I'm joking.
They've been one of the best teams in the league for the better part of 3 months now. They got up to a really slow start. I think Boston will surprise people. I'm tempted to pick them to win the American League. I'm not going to, but they might win it. They're stacked. Their offensive, like, their lineup is loaded. Are you there?
Yeah, my internet went out, but. I think I know I'm when I'm being like I'm not I'm being 100% serious though when I say, like, Boston's like a 90 plus talent win team in my opinion. Like, I think they're a good team. Don't get, like, 100%. I do think, however, that the team that I think least scares me in that American League East is strange enough Tampa. Like, Shane Boz is out right now. I don't know if you saw, he has an elbow issue again. That's very, very bad for their pitching depth. Elbow issues are not good at all. An elbow sprain is really, really bad. Considering he had shoulder issues, elbow issues, all these issues, like, these are not good signs for a pitcher who relies on velocity and is trying to come back from a second injury. I don't see how he comes back fully healthy as a starter. He's going to be at least out for the next month in terms of not even picking up a baseball. So to build up your throwing program, you have to throw for a month after. So he might not be back until mid-September. And at that point, is he going to be ready to start games for the Rays down the stretch, meaningful games with playoff implications and division series on the line, with how many home runs he's been giving up, how easily he's been getting barreled, how quickly he gets knocked out of starts because he can't go deep into games, right? Like, their number one is McClanahan. I think he's the best pitcher in baseball this year. But who's the number two? Who's number three? Who's number four?
The line. I mean, I guess you go Corey Kluber as your number two.
But he's very average. This year's been solid, but he's not, like, I would say he's closer to Jameson Taillon than he is to a number two starter.
Oh,
I think
for Boston, sure.
I think Boston would not pretty easily, but I think Boston and Tampa, Boston, when they're not, like, because they have a lot of COVID issues right now, and they're, you know, of all these hurt, and I don't think that's going to, like, he's going to be back soon. They've lost a lot of one-run games. Boston's very strange in that manner, where they've been stretched thin in the bullpen because they're calling on so many of the relievers to be starters when they shouldn't be starters. I think if you give me a playoff rotation involved, you know what, I guess you're three at that point. Good lord, I don't even know
Pivetta at that point.
Who?
It'd be Nick Pivetta, I think.
Pivetta, yeah. Pivetta's okay. You know, he's all right. Reinforced starters, but they have, like, a really good one and two, and that's better.
Yeah, I mean, like, with you look down one and two, I think you could make an argument that Sale and Eovaldi are better than Severino and Cole as a 1-2.
I don't think that's the truth. I think Eovaldi is very close to Severino, true talent wise. And I think Cole is clearly better than Chris Sale. Like,
I mean, yeah, Cole's definitely better than Sale, but I think I'd take Eovaldi over Severino, but
I would not. I'm telling you right now, like, Severino, taking Severino. I mean, again, if we want to use, like, playoff resume, Sale also absolutely fucking stinks in the playoffs. He has, like, a 6 ERA. Like, it's weird. I mean,
Cole hasn't been great in the playoffs either.
He has a 2.92 ERA in the playoffs, to be fair.
In Houston.
I mean, he did have that dominant play. He did have a very dominant 2020 playoff run with the Yankees. So let's not trip a little bit. You know,
I think the thing about the Rays, though, like, I think you discount, this happens every year. We look down the roster, like, oh, these guys are nobodies. But, like, Drew Rasmussen has a 3.1 ERA. Jeffrey Springs is a 2.5 ERA. Like, these are guys who, you know, they're not household names. They're not Luis Severino. They're not Garrett Cole. But, you know, McClanahan has been better than Cole this year. I think
he's the best pitcher in baseball right now. Like, right now, this year, best pitcher.
You think, full stop, he's better than Alcantara this year?
Absolutely. True talent wise, yes. Not better this year in terms of production. I think Alcantara is the best pitcher this year production wise, but in terms of, like, true talent, like, stuff, all that, all those things incorporated, I don't really see how you could say McClanahan isn't better than everyone else, unless you want to make the argument like Burns. You want to see a little more from McClanahan because how good Burns was last year and how good Burns still is. I get that 100%. You know, I think we're reaching the point with McClanahan where his stuff is just so, so good. Like, his stuff is ridiculous.
And so, like, right now, I think McClanahan is the odds on favorite to win the Cy Young.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm talking about Vegas odds. So yeah, it's him, and then it's Verlander, and then it's Otani. And so, like, in the American League, I think if you end the season right now, McClanahan, like, you know, he's a Ray, but he's got 110 innings to his name. Like, he hasn't, like, had a volume issue at all, which is one thing you have to look at when you're looking at Tampa, is because, like, these other guys, you know, Rasmussen's made 14 starts, but he's only thrown 66 innings. He's only averaging, like, 4 innings a start, 4.5, I guess. Kluber, 88 innings, 17 starts. That's like, that's another guy's averaging 5 innings a start. But if you look at McClanahan, he's 110 over 18 starts. So, you know, that's over 6 innings a start that you're looking at from McClanahan. He's going deep into games. He's not giving up runs. He has really, really, really good advanced numbers. And that's the argument you would make for him over Alcantara with Miami. Because Alcantara is obviously, he has, like, the same ERA, more innings, but less strikeouts. I think more walks. But, like, I've always favored a guy like Alcantara who goes, you know, he's been actually unbelievable, like, with just the pure volume that he's put up. He hasn't thrown less than 7 innings in was since May 11th. It's 12 starts in a row, more than 7 innings with a 1.24 ERA. That's fucking crazy. That you like you don't see that. He's thrown 3 complete games. He's gone 8 innings 3 times on 4 times on top of that. So 7 out of his last 12 starts, he's gone at least 8 innings. And yeah, he's a 1.2 ERA.
He's an MVP candidate, absolutely, 100%.
And I think in the National League, right now, if the season ended today, I think you can make the argument that he's the MVP over, I know Goldschmidt's been everyone's, like, favorite guy. I don't even know if he's been the best player on his team, to be honest with you. But I think you would go with Alcantara.
Yeah, I go with Alcantara for the MVP and the Cy Young in the National League right now. Season ends today. You mentioned Rasmussen and Springs. Completely forgot about them. That's actually 100% my fault. So, you know, maybe I do pick them in a playoff series over Boston. But I think ultimately when it comes down to it, right, the problem with Tampa,
I think,
is...
Keep going.
What I was going to say was that I think ultimately when it comes down to it, Boston and Tampa are in their own tier in the American League, like in the American League East of like, they're right there with each other. I know Toronto's in fourth right now. I think Toronto's the second best team in that American League East. And I think they emerge as that number three team in the American League, that team that kind of, you know, comes out of nowhere and becomes a direct challenger to the Astros and the Yankees in the playoffs. Because here's a couple things they have going for them towards the deadline. One, played so poorly in the first half that you have to imagine they just start playing better in the second half because this can't hold up all year.
Well, they just fired their manager. That's
right.
One thing.
And number two, they have more assets at the deadline than the Red Sox or the Rays do that they're willing to part ways with to go get better. Like you can't tell me the Rays can't empty their farm because if they do that, they have nothing for the next. They're not good. Their depth comes from their farm. Whether that's good or bad, I think it's a fine way to build your team. Don't get me wrong, but they don't have the financial flexibility to go out and kind of dump their farm or replace the players in free agency. The Blue Jays can go out and make pretty big deals. They can go get a Frankie Montas or Luis Castillo, fix a lot of their problems in rotation, go get a couple of relievers, and that team is really, really scary. That team still has Vlad, Bo Bichette. That team still has Springer, Teoscar Hernandez. Kevin Biggio's been better this year. They have great catching. Right, Kirk is one of the best, if not the best, catcher in baseball. Jansen's a great backup. They can do DHing wise, right? You can go Vlad first base. You can put one of the catchers to DH Kirk, DH Jansen to catch, unless, you know, or Jansen to DH Kirk to catch, however you want to do it. They have so much. Their team is too damn good for them to not be the second best team in the American League East. They're not too far behind the Red Sox and the Rays.
If you look at, so you're saying that third team in the American League, because obviously the first two are set in stone. It's Houston, it's New York. New York's better than Houston so far. I trust Houston more in the playoffs just because of their track record. Like they've always been one of the best. I think the third best team in the American League is Seattle. I think they're going to be the ones that actually end up being challengers. Their starting pitching is so much better than any of the teams you just mentioned. You look down, you've got Gilbert, you've got Ray, you've got Flexen and Gonzalez. They all have ERAs sub 4. Ray's been really good since the beginning of the year. Like he was off to a slow start, but he's kind of evening out. And the Logan Gilbert's been one of the best pitchers in the American League. He's got a high xERA, but I don't think that really matters. Maybe this is a hot take, but I just think you've got a guy in Julio Rodriguez who is, I think, just as good as, you know, a guy like Vlad or a guy like in Boston with Devers. I think Rodriguez is just as good as those guys. And I think Seattle ends up being that team that challenges them. I believe in this. Like, they've been really good the last, I think, month or so, couple months. They were kind of stagnant, but now they've kind of gotten going. They've won 10 games in a row. I'm buying in Seattle. I'd also buy on Baltimore. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but I think Baltimore has got a really bright future ahead of them.
I would sell Seattle stock really hard right now. Let's look at adjusted ERA for these guys. Robbie Ray, sub 4, sure, but it's 95 ERA minus. It's 5% better than league average ERA. Logan Gilbert's got his FIP and XFIP and Sierra are not, they're all indicating regression. Like he's not sustained his performance. I'm sorry. I know people are going to say, I know you like ERA, but there's just no way that sustains consistently over a full season. Like that, not no way, excuse me. It's possible that sustains, but I think it's a lower probability. Flexen, same situation here. His ERA minus is actually 104. So he has an ERA that's worse than the average ERA. considering ballpark and league environment. And then Marco Gonzalez, another guy, like, I just don't think that's sustained at 88 with a 133 FIP minus and an 80 and a 126 xFIP minus, a 5.17 Sierra. That's not sustaining. This is a guy. These are the
starting. Gonzalez has been good though. Like this is not like an anomaly for him. He's been good the last 4 years, yes, even with the high xFIP, high Sierra. So,
but the ERA is.
Tough to say that he's like not the guy that he's been right now, because you know he's one of those guys where like he doesn't strike guys out, but he gets guys out, and this is a pretty large sample size he's doing it for.
In the playoffs, that does not work. You cannot have pitching that doesn't get swings and misses reliably. You cannot have three starting pitchers, if you include Logan Gilbert, whose strikeout rates aren't phenomenal this year. You know, you can't have three guys who can't get swings and your two and then, three, four starters can't be guys who can't get swings and misses at a great level. And two,
I think Logan Gilbert's still a solid strikeout.
No, he's an okay
solid strikeout rate. And then if you look down, George Kirby also has been very good. And his advanced numbers are much better than anyone else's on this team. 3.43 xFIP, and then for Kirby, he has 3.45 Sierra. So if you even if you don't want to buy in on one of the other guys, then you have to buy in on him, right? Because you can't really make the argument against him and them at the same time.
Yeah, I could buy in on Kirby, but my only drawback here is, again, this is a guy who doesn't miss bats at an elite level. Like, you're not going to face Houston and expect to win a playoff series when you can't get swing and misses. That's a team that will kill you if you can't get – the Yankees will kill you if you can't get swings and misses. Toronto will kill you if you can't get swings and misses.
I think that's Boston such a generalized thing to say.
That's like, not really generalized. BAPIP goes way down the playoffs. So you can make – BAPIP goes down the playoffs, sure, so you can make the argument.
So you can make the argument, yes, that putting that, the ball in play is actually –
right. But worse. At the same time, batters – teams are throwing out guys who are trying to hit home runs, who are – very good at it, most likely. You don't see very many teams that are good in the playoffs that don't hit home runs. So if you're Seattle, how do you expect to win a playoff series against Toronto, against the Yankees, against the Astros, against the Red Sox, against Tampa even, when you cannot get them to swing and miss because your pitchers don't do that? And you are probably not – I mean, you might out-homer them. They are pretty – I'm going to double
check. Seattle homers a lot.
Yeah, Seattle's a pretty good home run hitting team. No, actually they're 13th, so they're not great. They're okay at it, right? So you don't have great, like, this just isn't a team that's beating the Yankees or Astros or Toronto in the playoffs. They're just not.
I think you'd be surprised. No,
I would be very confident. Like, I bet if they matched up with Toronto in an ALDS, I would bet a lot of money that Toronto would.
Well, I think this would end up being a wild card, not an ALDS.
Oh, yeah, wild card three. I mean, I guess three games I'm less confident because it's
three games. Right, because it's three games.
But and I'm confident that the Mariners don't make it past the ALDS if they somehow make the playoffs. And I'm not even confident they make the playoffs.
I think they're going to make the playoffs for sure because their division is so much easier than the other ones. Then the AL East, like the AL Central is going to get one team and one team exactly. And it's probably going to be Minnesota. I think Minnesota is going to get knocked out by whoever the hell the fourth seed is, whether it's all these teams are close. I think there's five teams that are within like four games. It's Toronto, Baltimore, Seattle, Boston, and Tampa. I think they're all within like four or five games within each other in the wild card race. I think Seattle is my favorite team out of those. And I don't mean favorite, like I like them the most. I think favorite is like, I think they're the best team out of those. Maybe Boston, you can make the argument because Boston's so loaded offensively. And I think that plays in the playoffs, especially if you, in a three game series, Boston's really, really scary. I think they could beat almost anyone in a three game series, even Houston, even New York, because, games one and two, you're sending out Sale and Eovaldi, who are two guys like those are two top, pretty close to the top line for starting pitchers. And then you've got a lineup, you know, Duran's been good. And then Bogarts, Devers, Martinez, Story, Verdugo, like that's a loaded lineup. And I think that's the fourth best team in the American League because I still think Seattle's better, but we'll see.
I'm telling you, if there is a team that's surging right now that you, if you wanted to kind of sell stock on, It's the Mariners. That's that, or I guess you could say Baltimore, but you know, that's kind of a cop out. I'm gonna go with a team that's in a playoff spot right now. If there's one of those teams that start to just struggle for no reason, or quote unquote no reason, see, it's Seattle. Now I will say, here's one advantage Seattle has that I mentioned this with Toronto, but Seattle also has this advantage. If Seattle wants to get Frankie Montas or Luis Castillo, they can, right? And that changes a lot, because now you have a guy who can get, you know, can get bats to miss in the playoffs. They can kind of supplement this roster pretty well. Even if it's a Tyler Mahle, right, where it's just someone who can be a number 2-3 pitcher, I think Ray can be your ace in October and you'll be fine. I think a lot of people kind of overlooked Ray. I think one thing I like about Ray too is he throws his slider a lot more. He's clearly making adjustments to get swings and misses.
And like, in his last six starts, he's thrown 39.2 innings, 0.91 ERA. So he's gone six innings, 6.2, 7, 6, 7, 7. So he's gone above six every time. He's averaging 6.2, and he's given up four runs in his last six starts. He's clearly finding something. You know, obviously his advanced numbers aren't the same, because you're never going to get a 0.91 Sierra. Like, that's just not going to happen. But if you look down this Mariners lineup, I think they've kind of found lightning in a bottle somehow with Carlos Santana. I don't know how. I don't think this sustains, but you look at Rodriguez, like, he's been, since like May, one of the best players in the league. And I'm buying in completely on Julio Rodriguez. I think he's as good as Soto and Acuna. I think he'll be that.
I agree there. Yeah.
I think he'll be that guy for the next decade and a half in Seattle, as long as they keep him. Even if they don't, like, I think he'll be one of the top 5 to 10 players in the league for a decade at least. Like, I don't see a reason why he's not Soto. He's not Acuna. He's elite offensively, elite defensively, elite on the bases, elite speed, like kind of everything you want in a player. But obviously one player can't carry a team. Suarez has been good. France has been good. Crawford's been good. Raleigh's been good behind the plate. And then Winker's been good in the outfield too. Like, that's six guys, six above average bats, three of which have been like really, really good. So I don't know. I think
your big move here is you go get a second baseman, right? You go get a guy like a Brandon Drury. Again, Brandon Drury and Luis Castillo to the Mariners. Like, now I think I could sit back and say, look, this is a team that is really fucking good, right? Like, the bullpen's good. The bullpen's amazing. They got great bullpen depth. They're really good at turning, you know, like Eric Swanson. He was not the big guy in the James Paxton trade, but he has been absolutely great this year in terms of his strikeout rates and low walk numbers. If you look at, you know, the rotation, if they have Robbie Ray, Luis Castillo, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, I guess you go, was the four. Like, that's a really strong 1-4. That at that point, you can sell me on that rotation, because there's enough guys in there that get swings and misses. You look at the lineup, you add Drury in the middle of that lineup. You have Drury, Crawford, France, and Suarez in the infield. You have, you know, you figure out your DH spot.
I think it's Winker in the outfield.
And J-Rod is your... You know, J-Rod, as you mentioned, is cerebral. Haniger is coming back soon. Haniger's probably a 120 WRC plus hitter.
So then that gives you five of them.
Yeah,
between Suarez, Rodriguez, France, potentially, and then Haniger, and then potentially Drury, which would give you five. And then Crawford's right at 116. So that's, I think they're good either way. I think they're going to make the playoffs either way, and I think they're going to make noise in the playoffs either way. But if you add at the deadline, which I'm sure they're easily buyers, there's no reason for Seattle to sell. I think that they're one of those teams I'm buying in Seattle. Obviously, you know, out of these two teams on 10-game winning streaks, I think they're the better team. I don't, you know, Baltimore's got kind of a similar thing going, where they've got, like, they had a top prospect leading the charge, but I just don't think they're quite as good as the Mariners.
Yeah. Okay. You can kind of, I'm going to say that yes, the Mariners can get better enough at the deadline to put themselves at that level. But honestly, they gotta make the moves, right? I just don't buy into the pitching right now. I don't buy into their, I mean, they could make the playoffs. That would be pretty unsurprising, but I'd be surprised if they made it deep in the playoffs without getting someone that could push one of Marco or Flex in either rotation, or not both. You know, you get Kirby back, you get Kirby developing throughout the year. You hope he can put something together has obviously been remarkable. I just, again, I can't buy into a team that has so few guys, just one guy in the rotation that's a good strikeout arm in this modern game. But, you know, Jays, Mariners, Red Sox, Rays, it's a big deadline for them, because if one of those four teams walk away with a big deadline, they cement themselves in a really good spot for the wild card series to have home advantage and kind of take that series and go to the ALDS and make some noise. We all kind of imagine Minnesota is an ideal for these teams based on their playoff resume, but Minnesota's another team that if they get starting pitching could be pretty good.
And I think one thing we're forgetting about the Mariners, I don't know where the hell Ryan went, but I think one thing we're forgetting about Seattle is we're talking about getting a guy like Brandon Drury to play second base. You're also going to get Kyle Lewis back. And then if you put him in center field, he's on his rehab assignment right now. So you put him even probably not in center field because you have J-Rod out there, but you put him in left, J-Rod in center, Haniger in right, and then you can DH Winker. I think that makes your team quite a bit better. I've seen some Seattle fans that have mocked themselves getting Contreras. I don't think they're really going to be in the running for him. I think Contreras is probably going to end up in New York, but I think the Mets also don't want to admit they fucked up with McCann, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, and you know, Contreras is a guy who he's at least going to be a great DH to a team. Like, he's just a really good hitter. Like, he just hammers the ball, he hits home runs, works walks. He's a great hitter. Ian Happ's another guy who I just imagine has a great market because he's just a great player. Like, getting good hitters is really valuable. And it's really hard to not have a market for good offensive players with sustainable stats. So the Cubs will definitely have a market there. I imagine other guys who are definitely on the move, Benintendi, even with his vaccination stuff, I'm pretty sure teams think they can get him vaccinated or don't care. I imagine Peralta, David Peralta on the D-backs, Cole Calhoun.
I think that the biggest sellers at the deadline, like, you know, last year, how Chicago and Washington both kind of sold their entire roster. I don't see that happening at all, really, throughout the league this year. There's no team that's kind of like been good but isn't good and then would sell the whole team like the Cubs and Nats did last year. But I think the Cubs are going to do it again. I'd like to see them keep Happ. I don't know if they're going to. Happ has an extra year control, so that's one thing that definitely, like, that's a bonus for his trade value for sure. I think they trade the relievers. I think they can get decent value for David Robertson. He's been really good this year. I think you can get decent value for Givens. I think Contreras is obviously, like, I don't know. I think Contreras' value is tough because I think the Cubs value him more than any other team, which is weird for a guy who's got such good numbers. And these teams that need catchers, I don't know if they've even, like, admitted, like, to themselves that they need catchers. Like, you know, the Astros, you look down their lineup and it's a clear hole, but I don't think they care. And then you look at New York and it's obviously a hole there, but I just think that they're just going to wait it out for Francisco Alvarez next year. But I think this is New York's, like, maybe not their best chance, but this is a chance for them to win a World Series. And I think that if you get Wilson Contreras, that really, like, strengthens your ability to do that.
Yeah, the Mets, you know, they've kind of gotten some good luck in the sense of the Dodgers aren't as good as they should be, you feel like. They don't feel as dominant. A lot of their starting pitchers have been worse because of either injury or, you know, they're just not as good without spider attack. So I don't know if I would really call it luck as much as it is. The Dodgers weren't as good as we thought they were, and the Mets are really fucking good. And the Braves are pretty good too, but the Mets, you know, beat them in that series. They've kept the Braves away, even though the Braves have tried to make a, you know, huge kind of historic NL East comeback. The Mets have kept them at bay, and that's really, really good for the Mets. They're going to be aggressive with the deadline. They should be. They should do whatever they can to get as much talent as possible. Because could you imagine if they got a guy like Luis Castillo for the rotation? They go, sure.
They need a pitcher because you go DeGrom, right? You have to imagine he's back for the playoffs.
You have DeGrom and Scherzer.
And then you have Walker, who's been really, really good.
Are we starting Walker in game three of a playoff series?
I mean, you could go Carrasco.
Are we starting Carrasco in game three of a playoff series? Like, I think the problem is not the rotation isn't bad. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, like,
okay, look at the other playoff teams in the league. How many how many teams have a guy better than Walker to start in game three of a playoff series? I know you love strikeouts and you love
stuff matters and swings and misses
in the playoffs stuff. But like, if you look down Atlanta, who's their number three start in the playoffs? You're going Spencer Strider, you're going Max Fried, and then Charlie Morton.
I mean, I'm just saying, I would take Jordan Montgomery over Tyron Walker. I would take, you know, Luis Severino, Nestor Cortez over Tyron Walker. I'm thinking other teams in baseball.
And
pretty comfortably, by the way.
I think Walker, you know, he's not going to be their three starter in the playoffs. It's going to be Bassett.
You could put yourself in a situation, though, where you have Castillo starting game three, and then who's beating the New York Mets in the playoff series?
Nobody.
Exactly. So, but my point is more so, why don't you just go get someone who wins the World Series right there?
I think their biggest hole is middle relief, though. I think they need a guy who they can put in, because their only reliever right now that you can really trust is Edwin Diaz. And he's been the best reliever in baseball, but who else? Like, Jolie Rodriguez has solid, you know, I guess Ottavino. Ottavino's been good, but Seth Lugo has been bad. Drew Smith has been bad since the beginning of the year.
I get what you're saying.
I know Lugo and Smith probably get more shit than they deserve, but I think you go out and you get a guy like maybe a Michael Givens or a David Robertson or a David Bednar. If the Pirates are trading Bednar, I think he's the perfect guy for the Mets. Because the Mets also have one of those farm systems where they can just kind of pull a guy out and it doesn't really matter because they can just replace him by buying someone else, which is what they're going to do. And I don't know. I think their biggest hole is middle relief. And then they could use a guy. They could use a catcher, obviously, but I don't think they're going to really target Contreras because I think the Cubs asking price is going to be really high. But Maybe Contreras gets traded to New York. And then, I mean, you look down their lineup, you got the outfield goes, McNeil in left, Nimmo in center, Marte in right. And then their infield is loaded too. You go third base, Escobar, Lindor, Guillorme, and Alonso. Like, they don't really have a hole on the roster other than you DH either Canna or I guess you DH Canna, and so then your only real holes on this roster are relievers and then catcher. So I think the Mets go for, I think that's the perfect trade partner for the Mets and the Cubs. I was gonna say Knicks, which is
Knicks baby.
For the Mets and the Cubs, I think they're perfect trade partners.
Yeah, and you know, ultimately, I guess you're right in the sense that they could use middle relief. David Robertson kind of pops up to mind for the Cubs. Is like David Robertson in the Cubs in that Mets bullpen with Edwin Diaz is a deadly combination. They probably want to go get a left-handed guy too. Andrew Chafin from the Tigers he's a good pitcher on a bad team. That's pretty much a very easy way to get traded if you're a reliever. Good relievers on bad teams with a 1-year, 2-year deal. Easy to see how you get acquired. Chafin and Robertson and Diaz, that's a really, really, really freaking good 1-2-3. Holderman's been pretty good for the Mets, so I wonder if they try to use him a little bit more. I imagine Joely Rodriguez could hopefully get a little bit better as the season goes on. Ottavino can be, you know, righty specialist. And suddenly have a pretty good bullpen. You know, a couple of those spots are going to be taking my starters. I would imagine at least, Peterson, but McGill should at least be a nasty reliever. Like, I imagine McGill as a reliever is pretty damn good. So, you know, the Mets have a lot. They have a lot definitely to do. They have things they definitely need to address, but they are very clearly, I think right now, the team that you look at and you say, hey, man, they make the right moves and they put themselves in a position to not run away at the National League, but put themselves in the spot to win the National League. And, you know, going against an American League team, you just kind of hope you don't run into the Yankees in a sense, because the Astros, if you run into the Astros, you're an NL East team in the World Series. You're going to win that World Series. That's just how it's gone. But I say that jokingly, obviously. I don't know.
Yeah, but if you run into the Yankees haven't won in like forever and they should have.
Yeah, but you get my point. Like, if they break the World Series curse and they lose in the World Series, it'd be torture. Like, I'd rather them lose in the ALCS. Like, if you're going to
make the World Series, you might as well win it.
Exactly. And I know that sounds
I don't think they're going to make it.
I think the Yankees World Series depends completely on what they do at the deadline. Like, if they don't get Castillo, they're not winning the World Series. That's how I see it. Like, they're not. They're not. No shot. Because the Astros will kill them in the playoffs. They're pitching in the playoffs. So, like, I'm sorry. Like, that's not going to work. If they don't get a starting pitcher, they are not going to win the World Series. That's how I see it. Yankees.
Okay, because I thought you were talking about the Astros. The Astros really need a starting pitcher. And I think, and I know people say this all the time. It's kind of a cliche, but getting a guy back from an injury is almost like getting a guy from a trade. So in Houston's case, I'm referring to McCullers. So you're going to get him back eventually. So it's almost the same, right? Where you're adding a starting pitcher to the team that you don't really need, but you could use. Javier's been good, but inconsistent. Obviously, like, Verlander's a guy who you can go in number one starter in the playoffs and feel great about it, right? He has a great track record in the playoffs. He's old. He's durable. You know, he's been great. And then Valdez has been great too, and he's your number two. Garcia's number three, and he strikes a bunch of guys out. You don't like guys who don't get strikeouts in the playoffs. Valdez and Verlander actually don't strike out a lot of guys anymore, but I don't know if that's a problem at all.
They're gonna have their 1-3, and they're gonna be their 1-3 with Verlander, Framber, and McCullough is gonna be really fucking good. And you one of Garcia
you see, being, but why is,
being a four is fine.
Why is Verlander's 8.5 K per nine not a problem, but you think like
because I look at
Gilbert's is
because I look at strikeout percentage and I don't look at K per nine.
Okay, even if you look at strikeout percentage, it's 25%. That's not
great. Yeah, that's a lot that's 3% better. He's 2% better than Gilbert is. And I don't even think like I think the difference, I mean, the difference also here is if you look at the peripherals, right? He walks fewer guys. His strikeout to walk rate is a lot better.
And he doesn't give up homers.
The peripherals are better. If Gilbert had better peripherals, I wouldn't be too, like, if he just didn't walk dudes, like the reason I like Kirby, even though he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts, he just doesn't walk dudes. His K to strikeout, his strikeouts to walk rate is phenomenal. So, I mean, Verlander is a better pitcher than Gilbert is. Verlander's got better stuff than Gilbert does right now. Verlander's got better command. He's a better pitcher just overall. Framber doesn't get swings and misses at an elite level, but we're also talking about one of the greatest ground ball pitchers, starting pitchers of the decade in terms of just getting ground balls. So pretty confident in him. McCullough, I'm a little bit shaky on. It depends on how he comes back from injury, but he's got great stuff. And the Astros are really good, and he's always been pretty good for the Astros. So pretty confident in him.
You trust the guy with the track record, right? And that's the other thing. I know I was being facetious there for a minute with Gilbert, but like Verlander is. He's a Hall of Famer. He's Justin Verlander. Whereas, like, Logan Gilbert's a rookie. So, we're, like, I think that makes a difference, especially come playoff time when, you know, I know people in the analytics community tend to disagree with this type of statement, but experience matters. And especially for pitchers can get rattled really easily. And I know it's like people are like, oh, well, clutch doesn't matter, right? It's not a thing. And maybe it's not like quote unquote clutchness, but like Verlander's not going to get rattled in the playoffs. Whereas you could see a guy like Gilbert maybe would because he's never been there before. And that's why you can trust a team like Houston who's been there literally every single year. They haven't missed the ALCS since what, 2017? 16. So that's 5 years in a row.
Yeah, you're not worried about variance nearly as much with the Astros as you are with any other rotation.
Right.
I mean, maybe New York. No, I'm good with the Yankees and Mets rotations, like in the playoffs. I'm just saying, like, in terms of, you know, I'm thinking the Mariners, thinking the Rays, thinking maybe the Red Sox a little bit in that second half of the rotation, though. I'm good with, hey, I think Eovaldi, you know, I can trust him. Sale is shaky with the injuries and just for some reason it shelled in the playoffs, but I don't think that's always going to be the case. Like, I just can't imagine Chris Sale has a 7 ERA in the playoffs again. Like, maybe I'm just being foolish here, but I just don't see it happening.
Right. And then I think another thing we don't really mention is in a 7-game series, like, these older guys are more accustomed to going games 1, 4, and 7. Whereas, like, you put a young guy out there on short rest, you can't really, like, it's.
Yeah, you don't know how they're going to react to it.
It's shaky. Whereas, like, you put Max Scherzer on the mound in game 1, you feel comfortable putting him out there 3 days rest game 4.
Yeah, you just have to, you want to have as little variance in the playoffs as possible in terms of, like, if you're the favorite team, of course. If you're not the favorite team, you want as much variance as possible because that means you have a chance to kind of shake things
right.
up. But if
and
the
like,
Astros, they're very, you don't want variance. You want things to go the way they should, because if things go the way they should, a really good chance of going to the World Series and then winning it. Yankees kind of in a similar situation. Mariners would love to have a little bit of like some if you're the Mariners, you want to face the Astros in the first round or the Yankees. You want to hope
you
that,
want you want thinking. You want to kill the beast early. It's basically like you want to you want to get the team that's the toughest the earliest because it's the shortest series,
right?
And you want to because you're more likely to win a 3-game series against Houston than a 7-game series against Houston. Whereas I think Seattle could knock off a team like Toronto in a 7-game series more so than they could knock off Houston.
Right. Yeah. No, you take your chances there. You also think just as currently constructed, you have to wonder how that Blue Jays pitching staff lasts in a postseason series. How many, you know,
I mean, I think the Blue Jays pitching staff is fine. I think the biggest question mark is Jose Berríos. Is he good or not?
Yeah, that's a big question mark, though. Like, that's your number three, right? Like,
because your 1 and 2 are incredible with
absolutely
also with Manoa and depth, right? Gosman.
Like, you relievers statistics, like, this isn't like a trope. This is, I'm pretty sure Cameron Grove, his pitching, the guy who makes the pitching bot model, he ran some numbers and figured out, yeah, pitchers do get worse or relievers do get worse throughout a playoff series when they're seen more often. So, I think the Blue Jays, you really don't know, you don't want to lean on the same guys every single game to close out games or to shut down in the 8th or 7th inning because those guys become less effective in a postseason series. The Mariners have a ton of guys they can go to. You think Murphy, you think Seawald, you think Munoz, you think Swanson, Castillo. There are so many guys.
And then I don't know if they've actually done this, but I heard talking about Matt Brash as a reliever.
Yeah, Brash is a reliever. That's another thing, right? Like, those are just guys who you can throw them. I'm not going to say Brash, but those are 5 guys I just listed who you could close a baseball game with pretty comfortably. They have to have another guy I'm forgetting about. I feel like there's another guy I'm just not remembering. I'm going to go to the Mariners depth chart right now. And
I'm see not. No, I think you kind of listed their entire.
Oh, he is in the bullpen right now.
Brash?
Yeah, and Festa. There we go. Matt Festa, it has like great strikeout numbers and low walk rates. He does get barreled quite a bit, so, you know, maybe not close a game with him, but they have guys with great stuff who you can feel pretty comfortable going out there and asking them to get outs in a playoff series and get strikeouts, and they can. It's kind of weird because I talk about how they don't get swings and misses, but their bullpen is very much the opposite. The bullpen's full of guys who have questionable ERAs, but they get swings and misses. I imagine Brash is a guy where if he can work out as a reliever this year, he's throwing a lot harder coming out the bullpen, 98.5 miles per hour. I think he should go heavily on that slider. Just go primary slider. Slider is disgusting. It's a sweeping, beautiful, gorgeous pitch on it, right? We've seen guys kind of move away from throwing the fastballs as much as places down across baseball. Go out and use your slider as much as you can. Use your fastballs to get a go ahead pitch, but it's not a devastating pitch anymore. It's just really hard. First slider more, get swings and misses, and maybe the Mariners bullpen can kind of carry them a little bit and give them some breathing room so that if they get a guy like Malley or Castillo or Montas, you go in a playoff series and that pitching staff is so good with the lineup, you could talk yourself into being a team that you face up. You're going to face the Astros and the Yankees in the first round, one of the two teams, right? Like, you Who? Are. The Mariners or whoever team is in the wild card, don't they have to face one of the Yankees?
They
the
could Astros take – no, no, that's – that. Well, okay, yeah. So that's not exactly true. If – Seattle ends up as the number one wildcard team, which is very possible. They're only 2 games out. Then you can get ALDS versus Minnesota if you're the 4 seed, and then Minnesota's the 3 seed. Or no, it's 4-5.
So no, three, no, 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 only three, two six, teams four, get five. The bye. Yeah,
yeah, it's 3-6-4-5. So yeah. if you're the middle, so the middle two, and then 3-6. So 3 is the worst division winner. So it's Minnesota, right? Unless somehow Cleveland or Chicago wins that division. Either way, it's the AL Central team, right? It's going to be the 3 seed, unless something fucking nuts happens, like, you know, right? But then you look at 4 and 5, it's going to be the top 2 wildcard teams play each other, and then the last wildcard team plays Minnesota. So if you're looking at, Seattle makes the top wild card, Boston's the second one, and Toronto's the third one, and Tampa misses the playoffs potentially. That's just one scenario, right? then you'd have Seattle and Boston play each other, and then Tampa plays Minnesota. So I don't know. It's not one of those scenarios where you're going to want to be a wild card team, but we'll see. And yeah, then if you win the wild card series, you're going to have to play New York or Houston in the second round in a ALDS 5-game series.
Yeah. So you just hope in a 5-game series, you kind of hope you can get, you know, whatever team you feel. We'll know better by the time October rolls around who's the better team between the Yankees and Astros in terms of just like who's scarier for a team to face. We'll see, because these aren't the final rosters, right? We have a deadline. We still don't know what the Yankees or the Astros are going to do. But you kind of hope in a weird way. You just kind of hope you face, like, the Yankees could get. I don't think the Yankees are going to hold on to the one seed if they don't clearly keep playing better than Houston, because they're only 4 games ahead of Houston for that one seed, right? It's like a massive gap. So the Yankees are going to have to continue to play better baseball than the Astros.
And it doesn't really matter.
I think it does. Home field advantage definitely.
Until you get to the ALCS, it doesn't actually matter.
I'm saying, like, I'm thinking from the perspective, like, the Mariners, the Red Sox, the Rays, the Blue Jays, right? Like, you don't really know who you want to face yet. You don't. You have no clue who you want to face in the first round yet. So you got to hope. You got to wait, kind of see who's in the first round, and then I guess you hope that you land the one that, you know, because the one seed probably ends up being not clearly the best team between two, but like pretty confidently the better team between two. So we'll see. You know, AL's definitely the interesting playoff mix here, because there are just so many teams that could. There are a lot of really good, like, there's enough really good teams. I know the National League full of World Series contenders there with the Mets, you know, Mets, Braves, Dodgers, Padres pretty good, Giants pretty solid, even though they've struggled this year.
I don't think the Giants are that good.
Yeah, I think the difference is, like, in the American League, even though the Twins kind of stand out as, like,
Minnesota stands out like a sore thumb.
Right. But at the same time, the National League, the Brewers kind of stick out like a sore thumb here.
I don't think they do.
You don't think they do in comparison to the Mets, Braves, and Dodgers?
I mean, maybe, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they knocked off the Mets, Braves, or Dodgers.
I'd be shocked. But we'll see. We'll see. I wouldn't know. Deadline changed
everything. I think the thing about Milwaukee that makes them dangerous is that you can go into a playoff series and so confidently put Burns on the mound, put Woodruff on the mound, put Peralta on the mound, and put Lauer on the mound. And you're like, this is our four, beat us. And I don't know if there's a lot of teams that can beat those four pitchers. Now, Milwaukee's problem is they don't score a lot, but I think, and I don't know, this is not statistically backed up, but I'm pretty sure since they moved Yelich to the leadoff spot, he's been really, really good. So you're going Yelich, Adames, and then trade for a hitter. That's the main thing that Milwaukee needs to do. Trade for a hitter, round out that lineup, strengthen it a little bit. But if you look at what they're doing right now with, I think they, here, I'm going to pull up their lineup from the last couple of days. You're going Yelich, and then you're going Adames, Tellez, McCutchen, who's actually been solid, and then Narvaez, Wong, Peterson, Urias, Renfro, like a combination of those guys at the bottom. Like, these are all guys who can hit. They haven't, like, been great, but they're all like decent hitters. Yelich is underperforming his xWOBA about 30 points. I don't know how much you really value that.
Stinks.
And since he moved into the leadoff spot, he's got a 400 on base percentage with a 131 WRC plus. So I think you look at it like that. Like, this is a team where their offense, I think, is good enough. I don't think they're great, but I think with that pitching, you go, you know, you get Burns for 7 and then Williams and Hader. That's a really, really hard game one. And so then you look at that in a scenario where I think it's most likely that they're the 3 seed and then either San Diego or Atlanta's the 4 seed, right? So then you'd have Milwaukee probably gets, who would be 6? It's St. Louis. I think they knock off St. Louis. I think they knock off San Francisco. I think they knock off basically any other team in the NL who's going to get that 6 seed. I don't think you're worried about losing the first round if you're Milwaukee.
I agree because you have your one and two guys, but we'll see. Again, it's a lot of this, especially with three game series, really tough. And we don't also know how these teams are going to look at the deadline. You know, again, one of these teams add a Frankie Montas or a Luis Castillo, and now your entire outlook on that team changes. So, you know, we'll see.
I think a sleeper team is Philadelphia, by the way.
It's what?
It's the Phillies.
A sleeper team?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they also have those two pitchers where if you sneak into the playoffs, you could knock off anyone.
And they have a decent enough lineup. They have the bullpen.
No, it's not a decent lineup. They have a loaded lineup.
They need to get the problem is their shortstop situation is fucking terrible. Like, so bad. Didi Gregorius and Bryson Stott are awful right now. Bryson Stott might be better. You don't think Didi Gregorius has been awful? He's a terrible baseball player, man.
No, I understand that. But I think I think come playoffs, you've got, Stott and Gregorius have been horrible. But I think, so if you look down the roster, maybe I'm wrong, but wouldn't Segura be playing short anyways?
No, he hasn't played shortstop for them ever.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Because obviously, Realmuto, you'd expect to be better than a 92 WRC plus. I'm sure he'll break out in the second half. I don't think that's really something you need to be that concerned about. But you look down the lineup, you got it's Schwarber, it's Harper, it's Hoskins, it's Realmuto, it's Segura, it's Garrett Stubbs has been good. Dubo Herrera has been okay. Like, this is a good lineup. Cassianos is another guy who's just been horrible. But you have to expect more from him, at least with the bat. Maybe not with the glove. He's pretty bad defensively. But with the bat, and I think you'd expect enough from him that, like, if you get into a situation where you're the sixth seed, you're playing Milwaukee, that'll be a really, really fun series, I think.
Yeah, you got Wheeler versus Burns and then Nola versus Woodruff.
And then I don't know who that three starter would be for the Phillies. Maybe you'd go... I guess you'd go Gibson, but I wouldn't really trust that. You could go Ranger Suarez maybe if he's healthy.
Their rotation is hilarious on the roster resource because it only shows Zach Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez.
So, what about Nola?
I think he's hurt or COVID IL. Or is he? No. Remember, he's not vaccinated. That's why. That's why they don't show him. Right.
What about Eflin?
Eflin, is he hurt?
Maybe.
He might be hurt. Yeah,
I don't know.
Hurt. He's always hurt, though.
I think Philadelphia is a team that, like, if they sneak into the playoffs, could make some noise just because those two pitchers are so dominant.
Yeah, I don't disagree. It depends. We'll see with that. I think everyone's kind of a we'll see if you're not the Astros, Yankees, Mets.
Dodgers,
Braves.
And like, Padres. I believe in the Padres. I think I'd put them
up
there.
I'm just saying, like, but even though their offense isn't great, so we'll have to wait and
see. Yeah,
but
I like think by the playoffs, you're going to have Tatis, so.
Will you have Tatis?
Why not? Unless you think he's
going to
get hurt
right,
again.
No, I'm saying right now, though. I'm saying currently roster is constructed. I'm very confident those five teams do something very good in the second half and play great baseball. And I'm very confident the ALCS teams are some combination of those five. That's how I see it. Maybe I'm wrong. Padres could be really good.
You mean the CS teams, not ALCS?
Oh, right. Championship Series teams, right, are between a combination of those five in their respective leagues.
So you think it's basically guaranteed New York and Houston in the American
League? No, nothing's a guarantee. I just think I'm saying if I were to pick, you know, confidently who I'm going to pick for the ALCS or NLCS, I'd go depends. So I have to think about the seeding, right? Because the Mets and Dodgers would be the byes and the Braves are the what? The four?
They'd be the four. So they'd play the Dodgers.
Right. So then at that point, if the Braves play the Dodgers, I'm going Mets, Braves. Mets are my more confident pick to go to the NLCS because you don't have to play the Braves. And I would pick the Braves.
Right. Because then the Mets get Milwaukee, most likely.
Right. And I'd pick right now the Braves to beat the Dodgers. I don't think the Dodgers starting pitching right now is very good. So I'd pick.
I don't know. Kershaw and Bueller. Obviously,
Bueller's not there.
He hasn't been great, but like.
He's just not there. He's hurt.
But we're not playing the NLCS in July. So
right, but I don't know. Like, I'm taking Strider and Fried over any of their starters outside
Gonsolin.
Of maybe Kershaw. I'm taking them over Gonsolin. ERA, yeah. I'm not going to get fooled by ERA that hard. I'm sorry.
Bueller's really good.
Look, here's the thing. FIP, X, FIP, and Sierra stabilize really quickly. ERA does not stabilize. That shit changes so much start in, start out, right? So I'm not going to sit here and get all giddy over. And you remember Kyle Wright. Kyle Wright is also very, very good. Kyle Wright has a 2.97 ERA. Like, he's a great number three. He's better than whatever they've got going for him. And Morton, I know, Urias? Has a high ERA. Yeah, he's better than Urias. Yeah, right now I'm taking him over Urias.
But then you look at the lineup, and I trust, like, the Dodgers have 9 hitters who are great, great hitters.
And you know,
top
what?
To bottom,
the Braves have a great enough position player core where they can beat up on the Dodgers, don't you think? Where they have
Acuna, like,
Swanson, Olson, Riley. They have Darno, who's a good catcher. They have
Ozuna
Harris, who's
sucks.
Amazing. Ozuna does suck, but you don't have to play him. You can play William Contreras, who's been great. You can DH him. He's, you know, he's got a 147 ERA plus. He's been great.
It's tough.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think all these teams are good, but I just, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's a big what we'll see radar. So, you know, I guess to wrap up my thoughts here, unlike last year where I was very confident, you know, Dodgers would be like best team, kind of go away. And it kind of shows you how the randomness of baseball, because they didn't even make the World Series. But for the first time, kind of a while, the Dodgers look vulnerable. The Mets and Braves look poised to try to take that from the Dodgers, that top NL spot, and kind of secure it. In the American League, the Yankees are trying their hardest to be that one team, that one seed. They're trying their hardest to kind of overcome, kind of beat the, I'm going to say beat the Astro allegations. They've got a great grasp on their league. I think the divisions outside this AL Central in the American League are wrapped up. It'll be the Astros and Yankees winning the divisions. NL West, Dodgers are pretty confident win it. Pretty confident they win it. I don't know how the NL Central and NL East work out, but you know, there's a lot of great teams, a lot of great playoff teams here. And the deadline is going to be huge more than ever, because there are so many teams that are really close to being World Series favorite type teams. And all it takes is one or two guys being added to their roster.
All right. I think we're good then. Thank you guys for listening. And we'll see you guys in episode 62.
Peace out.